Welcome back everyone. My name is Sagar and you are listening to Road to Revamp. We were in conversation with Coach John and as I promised, I am back with another invigorating episode. If you haven't heard the previous episode yet, go check it out now on our website, that is www.roadtorevamp.com. Next up will be Abhishek with our guest Coach John.
Let's come to your workshops. I've seen a common denominator in all your workshops. I've attended so many. And one thing is common. You never try to you never say that use force. You're always saying be effortless. So like in the last workshop, you were saying as if you're more effortless, you're using less strength, you'll be able to flow way easily than if you use force. Why is it so, like, every time, even when you were doing some strength moves like handstand and all, even then you were not asking us to, you know, tight this, tight that, and do this and do that. What is the secret?
the secret is, well, first and foremost, the secret isn't that secretive. Number one, we have a clear association between different activities and different efforts. Like, we assume that Tai Chi is supposed to be fluid, no effort. It's calm, it's serene. You have a crane sitting on top of your shoulder while you're moving in the bamboo forest. Everything is calm. Same thing with yoga.
It is not.
Yeah. It is not. Try Tai Chi and you will be, you know, you will be surprised at how heavy and how much tension you need to create. And the same thing when we look at powerlifting or other very strenuous activities, then we have the clear association of a lot of tension, a lot of hard work, a lot of focus, discipline, go hard, go home. The reason why I try to promote using less effort and more less strength is that it is much easier to add effort than take it away. So I'm not saying that every movement should be without any sort of effort. We start there so that we understand how it feels, because if you use less force, then you will be more aware of aspects in the movement. And then we can add effort. It's kind of like, in training as well. If when I write a program, I try to find the minimal amount of work that we can do to get a positive response, and then we add if we need to. The same thing in movement. Start effortless, start with less stress on your body so that you can be more aware of what's happening, and then gradually we add more effort to adapt, to get a progression. And also in general, learning how to be effortless. Again, we have an idea that when we're training, it needs to be intensive. It needs to be hard. We need to feel broken so that we feel like we can repair ourselves afterwards. And the repair makes us stronger. And unfortunately, this idea, it makes us less aware and less receptive to what's happening because we're focusing on the result that we get into 2 days or 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years. But we have to be able to get ourselves into the moment of movement so that we understand what is happening, what we should do, what we should not do, and simply be more aware. There's nothing wrong with like heavy movements. I'm a huge fan of training a move that is so difficult that I can only do two or three repetitions, then it's usually quite heavy. But I don't exert myself more than I need to, because the nature of good movement is being efficient. Yeah. And why is efficiency so important? Because you end up doing more.
Right.
And your ability to do more and continue to do more is the secret.
Yeah, like in a 50% one rep max squat, I'm way more comfortable and I can spend a lot of time during the movement in comparison to when I'm close to my one rep max.
Yeah.
It's, I just want to get out of the bottom position. I don't want to stay there.
No.
So I think there are very less inputs or information I'm gathering while I'm lifting too heavy.
I think that, yeah, it's like you're saying, a high intensity will make you want to escape.
Yeah.
It makes you want to run away.
Yeah.
Of course, it will be beneficial to learn how to deal with that. That's another tenet of good movement, is being able to deal with the sensations that you are feeling in any kind of situation, or as many situations as possible in a movement. So some people who only do one rep max kind of training, or sub-maximal training, they are not very comfortable once they start doing 30 repetitions, or only 5 repetitions but really slow. And some people who are very accustomed to doing something really slow, once you add more weight, then they're not able to do that.
Right.
We want to kind of respect the entire spectrum of the intensity. But the best way of doing so is not by going 110% intensity and then subtracting, because then we get less aware and we don't understand the finer parts of the movement. Rather starting soft,
yeah,
and then adding intensity as you understand how to apply the softness of the movement.
Yeah, after this workshop, during the day, we were feeling great.
Yeah.
But when I was in bed, I was feeling a little tired.
Yeah.
And in next morning, I was sore. And I didn't get out of my bed till 11 in the morning. Not so soft.
Oh no, no,
yeah.
No. It's about the work that you accumulate. It's not about the work that you do in one set.
Yeah.
So making sure that you find a good training is all about a lot of good quality work and a lot of good quality recovery and a quality rest, we can call this. And so many people focus on getting so much hard work done,
yes,
that they don't get enough work.
Yes. These days, mobility training is in fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is posting something regarding mobility. Someone is doing FRC, someone is using yoga, someone is doing mobility ward. Everyone is trying to be more mobile. What is your approach to achieve functional mobility, I would say?
It is first by getting rid of the notion that mobility is a resource. A lot of people think that, and this applies to strength as well, we often think that, you know, you hear this a lot of the times, I'm just not mobile enough. I'm not strong enough to do this. But mobility is not, it's not, you know, like a resource. It's not a, you don't have a box in your body, a cardboard box that says mobility, and then you can just take whatever mobility you need out of this box, even if it says ankle mobility. Mobility is a very particular and specific skill that can be limited by your physiological resources, like your bodily structure. It can be limited by your joint, but first and foremost, it is a very specific skill. So we can work on your ankle mobility, but we need to do that in several ways, because every type of movement in the ankle is in itself a specific skill. And we want to make sure that what you are doing is specific to whatever you want to achieve. And hopefully a bit more than just what you want to achieve. So what I try to do is I create a strategy that is holistic, in the sense that you get to apply your mobility in more ways. So let's say that your challenge is sitting in a squat. Well, then, first and foremost, we would create a condition that allows you to sit in a squat comfortably. And then, we add intensity in movement, then we take away the comfort in the squat. Gradually taking away comfort, either by, let's say that you start by elevating your heels, then we take away that comfort. Just taking it slowly away. And then we just hang out there. And when I say hang out, it's not about being in a static, perfect squat. It's about exploring the squat so that your body gets more experience in that condition. So when you hang out in the squat, you can flex your spine, you can extend it, you can go from side to side, putting more weight on one foot and then the other. You can lean back and you can lean forward. You can change the position of your arms so that we change the placement of the center of mass so that the position changes a bit. So that we get to know the position and that we understand that it's not a bad thing to be there. Because mobility is, yes, it can be limited by your physical status, but it is first and foremost limited by the nervous system's willingness to allow you to be in that position. Like any other biological organism, our primary job is to survive and protect ourselves. And being in a large end range of motion is perceived by the body as not a very good thing. Why? Because you are weaker there and you don't spend a whole lot of time there. So we kind of want to imagine that we're trying to convince the nervous system that it's okay to be in that position.
Yeah.
And we can use that by applying more and more stress in the position, but also by exploring it so that you don't only get stuck in one position, because then you won't use it that often and then you have to convince the nervous system of more things.
Yeah.
So that is one thing. And the second thing is to be able to get down into the position while being assisted by gravity. So let's say that you basically just do a squat. Just do a slowly controlled squat where you end up in a deep end range of motion. And then we have to address the opposite, being able to get into the position while being resisted by gravity. So let's say that you're doing a squat and you're doing it in a weighted fashion so that you get some sensation of a stretch.
Yeah.
Because we want to improve the body's tolerance to the sensation of stretch. The sensation of stretch, when we feel like it's stretching in a body part, it's not because you don't get the sensation of a stretch because the muscles are being stretched. You get the sensation of a stretch because your body is producing that sensation. It's kind of like if you compare it to temperature. You don't feel coldness.
Yes.
If you're freezing, you don't feel freezing. You create the sensation of freezing because your body is trying to tell you, hey, it's not, we need to warm up. The same thing with a stretch sensation. It's not something that you get. It's something that you create. So we need to learn how to apply that sensation of a stretch, and we can do that with some sort of load while we're being assisted by gravity into the position. But we also need to be able to get into the position while being resisted by gravity. So let's say that you have a beautiful squat position. Okay, let's try to get into that squat position while you're hanging from a bar. What happens then? Let's try to only allow one leg to get into that squat position while you're standing. Can you pull your leg up?
Yes.
While not having to modify the squat position that much? So that is my core strategy. And the reason why I like this strategy is because we can adapt it to the individual. We can adapt it to the individual's wants as well as the individual's needs.
You have just summed up this whole crazy idea of mobility in a very simple way.
I try to.
Yeah, because there are so many systems and they have their own technical jargon.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to name those things, but they have those jargons like, do this, do this, do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then only you'll be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that typical or hard to achieve the way people are showing that.
Creating. No. I mean, here's another secret. These jargons, and when people tell you have to do this for this and this many minutes and you have to apply this kind of stress and blah, 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 they have no idea. Like, if what they were saying was true, then we would see a whole lot more agreement.
Yes.
What we need to see is the common denominators between these different methodologies and systems, and then we find some very general guidelines.
Yeah.
They're unfortunately not very sexy and specific, but they are general enough so that you can apply them and not rely on a system. And if we're going to look at mobility, the common denominator is that you're going into your end range of motion and that you're staying there for quite a lot of time. And then you're to make sure that you're able to apply it, then you do something that is specific to what you want to achieve. And what is very funny, as an example, because we need to look at the timeline here, is that some people, let's say they're trying to develop a skill, and then they feel, oh, my mobility isn't good enough for the skill. And they've been working on the skill every day for the last 2 months. And then they go, no, okay, it's my mobility is a problem. I have just watched this very convincing, inflammatory, zealous post on Instagram, and I'm now convinced because of this person who incidentally is trying to sell me a product on Instagram that it's my mobility that's the problem.
Yes.
So they start working on their mobility. And then they go back to what their skill that they practice and they feel so much better. And it feels so much better. And then they think, well, I did A and I got result B, so A produced B. But wait a minute. Wait just a freaking minute. You were practicing that skill every day for 2 months. You accumulated fatigue. You refined a motor pattern and a habit. And then you took a break and you did something else. Was it because you did something else that you felt an improvement? Or was it perhaps the fact that you took a break?
And needed rest.
That is a huge thing that happens.
Yes.
Accumulating fatigue masks your performance level.
Right. It happens most of the time. Like, you leave back squat or pull up for a week or two, and suddenly it's like, wow, my chest can touch the bar.
Yeah.
It was not able to do that.
Like, yeah. No, it's the most common trap when it comes to trusting different methodologies. It's known as the ad hoc fallacy.
Yeah.
You did A and B happened, so A must have produced B. Sorry, there are more factors that are contributing to what you
do. Before these mobility methods, people were flexible. People were doing crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Without naming those methodologies or, you know, segmentalizing those things in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
People were successful martial artists, circus artists, dancers.
I would say that people were probably more successful depending if we look at their current situation. Like, so many of us now, we have so much time, so much resources, and we invest so much energy into what we're trying to improve. And if you look at things in the past, we had a much smaller gene pool. We had less time, less resources, less energy to focus on these things. And they were probably, compared to the resources they had available, way more successful than us. And why? Because they focused on what they wanted to improve. And they were trying to improve A. And they improved A by doing A and not focusing too much on B. B can be a supplement, but stick to A.
Yeah. This is a bit different question than this movement thing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a research in India, and I have made this general observation too, that more gyms are opening, more health facilities are opening, more options of moving are mm-hmm. coming in the market.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the population is getting more diabetes,
yep.
They're more obese,
mm-hmm.
they are having more hypertension. So why are we unable to stop these lifestyle kind of disease even after opening so many gyms? There's so much awareness throughout internet.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think so? Why it is happening? Even we have, like we were discussing right now, we have more resources and still we are incapable of doing things.
Well, one thing is that we are inherently lazy. You know, moving is not natural. Not moving is more natural than moving. So we're doing something that is very counterintuitive based on how we are designed. That's one thing, but that shouldn't stop us. The thing that stops us is the gap between those who train and those who don't. and how we view those who train and how we view those who don't. The differences in how we perceive these people is so big that those that do train and those that are trying to promote training, it's impossible for those who are inactive to relate to those people. I mean, if I did not work out, and I work out a lot, and if I didn't work out and I just spent 1 millisecond on Instagram, I would feel like everything that I saw was impossible to obtain. It was light years ahead of my understanding as well as my capabilities. And when you're met with that amount of resistance, then what's probably going to happen is that you're going to justify
your laziness,
which I can understand. I can totally understand that. I would definitely do that myself. So we need more people who, and again, this comes back to being able to show your preferences. I am like the people that gain status or fame, they're the ones who often talk about the amount of resistance they met and the amount of hard work they've done. You know, the blood and the sweat and the tears, and that now they being able to gather or take advantage of this fame, it's because of this hard work. I think we need more people who just move and just are happy with moving and just show that they're happy and just show the benefits of it instead of trying to push and convince people into moving, because if they don't, then their muscles will just wizen away and that their bones will break and they will feel horrible. We need people who are relatable and not who are role models or trying to be role models.
So we can say that the trainers who are talking about typical trainers bulging biceps and showing 8-pack abs to their clients, they can be demotivating to those clients?
Oh yeah, I think so. Definitely. It feels once you're in the presence of people who are, and let's be honest, people who are fanatical about it, then I think it is much easier to become demotivated by it, because you will always feel less than them. And because they're talking about health and fitness as being so important, and you think of what they have achieved is necessary to focus on health and fitness, it's too much of an investment. And it will just feel impossible.
That's why I can see like trainers who these days, trainers who might have like just good looking body, decent body, not like role model kind of bodies, they are doing way better than those who have like perfect Hercules kind of bodies.
The Hercules kind of bodies, they are willing to sacrifice much more than the general population to achieve those bodies. And I'm not only talking about effort, I'm talking about a lot of cheating.
And clients think that it is achievable by doing general training or general supplementations. It is not that easy.
No, it is not. It is not. One thing is that it demands a specific type of genetic potential. There is such a thing as having an advantage when it comes to genetics. And there's also such a thing as having an advantage in terms of how much time and energy you're willing to invest. And there is such a thing as being willing to sacrifice your health for the sake of fitness. And you can do that in a lot of different ways. You can probably find it on the street corner. And it's much more common than you would think.
Yeah.
Much more common.
Let me take some questions from our listeners.
Sure.
Some of your attendees in the workshops.
Yeah.
So one of them has asked that how do you break a plateau in your training? It could be any skill or strength or a movement. You do it and then you improve and then the progress is stagnant.
Mm.
So how do you suggest to break a plateau in a training?
The plateau, it almost deserves like the trademark kind of sign after it. The plateau is something that we see as incredibly complicated, when in fact it is not. A plateau is not complicated. There are three things that can help us get out of a plateau. Number one is doing more, unfortunately. This is due to something called the repeated bouts effect. Once you get you apply a stressor or you impose a stressor on the body adapts to that stressor. But not only the nature of the stressor, but also the amount of the stressor. So if you want to go out and get a tan, and you've never been in the sun before, you know, 1 minute will probably be enough.
Yes.
And then you can do that for quite some time, expose yourself to sun 1 minute at a time. But after a while, you'll need more sun. You don't need a different sun.
Right.
You don't need to go to Mars and sunbathe there. You need more of the same sun.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing in training. This repeated bouts effect, basically what it means is that the more you expose yourself to a stressor, the more you need up the stressor to adapt further. And why? Because you have already adapted so much. And we can do this in several ways. We can increase the volume of work in one day. So let's say that you're doing three sets of squats and you're doing this three times a week. Well, perhaps one of those days you increase by one set. Or you can increase the frequency. So instead of doing three sets for 3 days a week, which is a total of 9 sets, you can do 4 days where you do a random number, you do 2-3-2-3. That's a total of 10 sets. You accumulated more fatigue or stress. So that is one thing. We need to do more work.
Right.
Another thing, and this is also very common because people think that pain equals gain, is that you don't get enough recovery.
Right.
The amount of stress that you impose on your body does not matter if you are not able to recover from it. Working out is traumatizing the body, but getting stronger is being able to be healed or recover from that work. So recovery is a bit more complicated than work. Work is easy. It's the exercise you do and how heavy it is and how much you do it and how often. Recovery, then we have to look at more factors. Number one, sleep. My favorite athlete, he's kind of like this semi-lazy cross-country skier in Norway. I love him because he's so honest. And he says, my primary job is not to work hard. It's easy for me to work hard because I'm an athlete. I don't have to do anything else. What my primary job is, however, and what's most challenging, is resting, is recovering. It's awful. I have to force myself to eat, and I have to force myself to relax and sleep. And furthermore, I have to force myself not to think stressful thoughts. That in itself is very stressful. Because recovery is based on how you eat, so how much, and focusing on first and foremost the amount of calories that you get and the macronutrients. And then we can look at the micronutrients, and we can look at minerals and all that stuff, and supplements as well. So how you eat, and it depends on the amount of rest that you get. So the times where you are inactive or not pushing yourself physically. And another thing that I will not put in the category of rest because it is so important is sleep.
Yes.
We have a sleep epidemic on our hands.
Exactly.
Not a lot of people get enough sleep, myself included.
Same here.
You will find that, you know, most people, they sleep maybe around 6 and 7 hours a day, maybe, or a night, maybe more. But for people who are pushing themselves hard physically, they probably need a bit more sleep. And the third thing is mental stress. Mental stress is a huge contributor to a lack of recovery. So our body is amazing. It is fantastic. It is a miracle, but it is also kind of stupid. It doesn't really care about what kind of stress you're imposing on the body. Of course, specific stress creates specific adaptations, but the way the body reacts to the stress, it doesn't really distinguish between physical stress and mental stress. So if you are burdened by a lot of stressful thoughts, then that will impair your recovery. Right. And a very funny, again, a common denominator. If we look at those people who are super successful in their training and why they annoy us, it's because they seem so carefree and lazy. They just seem like they don't have a care in the world. And when they're sitting in a couch, it looks like they're drowning in the couch. Like they're so relaxed, but they need to be. So taking care of your diet, taking care of your rest, taking care of your sleep, and taking care of your mental stress is a huge thing. And in my opinion, it's not a lack of hard work that is stopping a lot of people. Though that will be a factor. But hard work does not matter if you can't get, and this is a weird combination of words, hard rest.
Yeah.
You need to be a hardcore recoverer.
I think we should start a certification how to rest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a big thing. The third element, it's a part of the second element, getting more recovery, but it deserves its own spot. And those are your beliefs about what you can do. Right before I came to Delhi, I went to a bouldering gym in Norway, and I was climbing, and there was this guy, an instructor at the gym, and he came over to me and he said, he was helping his friend create a new route, a new problem. And he said, "Hey, John, do you want to test out this route and see if it's this and this grade, like a 6B plus or a 6C minus? I can't remember." And I said, "Sure." And then I climbed it and I said, "Oh, it's probably around like a 6B plus. It wasn't that hard." And they were like, "Okay, cool." And then this instructor said, "Oh, by the way, the reason I know your name is because I follow you on Instagram."
Oh,
and I'm like, "Okay, cool. What's your name? Nice to meet you, blah, blah, blah." And then he said, "I need to ask you a question. I've tried doing the touchdown, the single leg squat, for such a long time. And I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm able to do it right." And then I said, "Well, could I see it? Could you try it?" And he said, "Sure." And he did a touchdown. He did a beautiful touchdown. He's like the fourth person I've seen who's able, third person I've seen who's able to do a touchdown. And I just said, "What the hell are you talking about? That is a beautiful touchdown."
Yeah.
And he said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm the one who not invented it, but I gave it that name." So by my rules, which is a touchdown is being able to stand on one foot and get your shoulder to the ground, you're able to do a touchdown.
Yeah.
And it was like, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." And he just started jumping up and down. I've never seen a guy jump that high so many times. And he was ecstatic and he was so happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, what other things are you working on right now that you don't feel like you're able to do?" And he said, "Well, I've been working on a backwards roll on rings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to do a forward roll, but I've never been able to do a backward roll."
Mm-hmm.
And I had seen him practice the forward roll.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was solid. He was super strict and strong and comfortable and very calm and focused while he was doing it. And then I said, "Go and do a backwards roll now,
mm-hmm.
immediately." And he said, "Are you sure? Are you sure?" And I said, "Yeah, go do it. Go do it." And he went up, and it was on the second floor, so I couldn't see him. I could hear him. And I waited 20 seconds. And then I just heard this this yell, like this ecstatic, like exuberant, jubilant yell. And I said, you were able to do it, weren't you? And he said, yeah. And then he came back down and he said, what happened? And I asked him, well, what do you think? And he said, well, I guess I just believed that I could do it because you believed that I could do it. And I said, yeah.
Yeah, your presence created that belief, I guess.
Yeah.
Because we see you as a role model in a way. And if you are, like, I still remember that day when you first taught me basics of press to handstand. Mm-hmm. And I was struggling. And you said, just do it on from this bench. Mm-hmm. And I said, I am doing it for months and it is not happening.
Yeah.
But when you said, just try once more, and my legs were off. So it was not something happened suddenly.
No.
But yes, someone who already has done that is saying that, yes, you can do this. It creates a lot of positive vibes, I guess.
Mm.
Maybe that was the reason.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but in training, we look at our training as this solitary progression. It's a fight against your own body, against time, against Newton, against the laws of physics. And it's like this lone wolf existence. And to a certain degree, it is. Nobody can train for you.
Yeah.
But somebody can believe in you.
Yeah.
The first person has to be you. But it really doesn't, it really doesn't hurt if you have other people believe in you too.
Yeah.
So belief is a huge thing. Our intuition is a wonderful, powerful tool, but it is shaped and often polluted by our experiences. And if the amount of experiences that we give ourselves is all about the challenges of everything and the hardness or the hardship, then it shapes our intuition often to a detrimental degree. And it's a super simple thing. And it's so corny and it's so cliche. But you just gotta believe in yourself. You can do it. And yes, having a role model in the same room is very good. But you have to be your own role model. You have to be the one whose opinion matters a lot to you. And so you have to say to yourself, I'm going to do this. Maybe I'll be unsuccessful. That doesn't matter. I'm going to do this. So having some sort of strategy as to, oh, that's a huge cockroach. Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Oh, sorry. Survived.
He was being lazy.
Yeah. No, but that's why I really enjoy hanging around animals. It's because they aren't influenced by your belief as to whether or not they can do it. They just do it.
Yeah, right? That's why I've never seen a dog stressed or a cow, you know, talking about hypertension.
No, exactly. But there was a very interesting study, like, and this is why it's important to believe in others, because how you believe in others shape how you treat them. And if you care about your own progression, then you should care about others. They did a study with rats, and they had two different groups of rats. One group was to be controlled by a set of human individuals. And the human individuals, they were supposed to guide this rat through a maze. So there were two groups of humans and there were two groups of rats. Each group of humans controlled a group of rats. And to one group of humans, they told them, this is rat group A. Rat group A is a bit lazy. They're not that intelligent. We've separated them from the other superior rats, and they will probably need a bit more. You'll probably need to push them a bit more and guide them in the right way. And then they did the opposite with the other group of rats. They said to the group of humans, this group of rats, they're like universal soldier rats. They're just like, they're super rats. They're so intelligent. And what happened is that they were supposed to guide these rats through a maze and trying to kind of push them and guide them in the right direction. And the group of people who had been told that their group of rats were stupid and dumb, they were like, come on, you need to do this. And we're like trying to push them in the right direction and just really being really frustrated about it, in understandably becoming more and more frustrated that they had to live with these stupid rats. The other group, they were like, yay, you can do this. We believe in you. Go, super rats. Go, super rats. And of course, the group of rats that the humans were told were superior, they got a superior result. Why? Because subconsciously, the attitude that you have towards a certain individual will influence so many things that you, like micro expressions and the way you say things and your subconscious attitude, and it really does have a huge influence on other people. So you have to ask yourself, number one, how are you treating the rats, and I'm saying this in quotation marks, around you? And second of all, which kind of rat are you? What are you telling yourself? Look at your fundamental beliefs about who you are, and then it will be much more understandable why you believe in the things that you believe that you can achieve.
You can create your own reality first in your brain, and then you can materialize it.
Oh yes, yes.
It's deep. Too much about recovery. And the next listener wanted to ask about your methods of recovery and what kind of supplements you take. And how do you manage your sleep?
I'm not saying that I do. Like for the, when I travel, it is really complicated. So, I mean, I'm not a smart individual when it comes to sleep, I guess. When I travel, it can be challenging. Sometimes I only get, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours of sleep. But in general, I try to make sure that I write down my thoughts before I go to bed. And when I write down my thoughts, I write down things that that are not within my control. Because if they're not in my control, then I can't do anything about it. So, fine, that's life. And then I write down things that I can and should control. And as soon as I've written them down on paper, I've kind of materialized them. They're more substantial, and it's easier for me to be at peace. And this can be regarding everything from my professional life to my personal life to my, let's call it, my spiritual life. So I write down these things, and I make sure that I'm not in front of a screen way too much. And I'm not necessarily very good at doing that because my job is on a screen, and sometimes I need to work at 11 p.m. because my clients are in different time zones. That's a sacrifice I have to make for living this life, which I really enjoy. So that's how I deal with sleep. I try to get enough of it.
And what about your supplements?
I take no supplements. The amount of supplements that work are very few. If we're going to trust the amount of evidence that we have right now, very few supplements will have a substantial impact. And some supplements even have the opposite effect of what they promise that they give. Things like branched chain amino acids, they're, again, if we're to trust science and evidence and not just personal observations that a lot of people have, they don't attribute to, or they don't necessarily create the positive effect that they promise. If I do take supplements, which I've done from time to time, I will use creatine monohydrate, just a plain old basic creatine, and just simply because it allows me to do a bit more work. I have taken some omega-3s and fish oils if I'm not eating a lot of fatty fish. Other than that, nothing. I just eat food, like real food. And we all know what real food is. Like you all you listeners out there, you know what to eat. you know, you know you should eat vegetables. Just eat them. You know you should eat fruit. Just eat them. You know you need a protein source. It's very good for you. And I think the only thing that a lot of people can struggle with is the amount of carbohydrates they should eat. And I would say, don't worry so much about that one thing before you have established everything else.
Right.
Establish the amount of calories you need. And a lot of people don't get enough calories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just from my personal experience. People train like crazy and then they deprive themselves of food.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you should challenge yourself in every single aspect in life. getting your calories first and then getting enough proteins. And then allow yourself to experiment with carbohydrates and with your fat intake. But please don't be afraid of getting too much of one or the other.
I think if someone is recovering well, like they're sleeping enough, then the need of carbohydrates substantially decrease.
Well,
my sugar cravings go so high if I'm not sleeping enough. But if I'm sleeping 8 to 10 hours every day,
mm-hmm.
then it feels like I don't want to eat anything sweet.
Mm. Yeah, it's a lack of sleep is basically a stress.
Yeah.
It feels like a stress. And carbohydrates, what's so wonderful about carbohydrates is that it just gives you this feeling of getting loads of energy at once, which is why we want sweets.
Yes.
Sweets and sweet things or carbohydrates, it's kind of like a huge energy resource for the body. So if you're depriving yourself of sleep or if you're not getting enough recovery, then it's very natural to want to take in whatever food you associate with loads of energy, because that's what the body wants. Yeah.
Some of the listeners only, they wanted to know more about the project because some of them are not so social media savvy and they wanted to do something like this, but they had no idea when it came, and especially the initial offer,
yeah.
and then it just flown away.
Yes.
So give me a brief description what this project is about,
mm-hmm.
and how, if they have missed, how they can again, can join it.
Okay.
And would you please make it more, it's not too easy to find it on social media too.
It is very difficult to find. But that was also the idea, to be honest. And I'm sorry for those of you who think that we're being mean-spirited or something, but there's a reason why we did it in this way. And it's not because we want to be exclusive. Our main goal is to be inclusive. We would like as many people as possible to join, as long as we are able to make sure that we have a good community.
Right.
An inclusive, good community where everyone is willing to share and where everyone is heard. Yeah. That is the main thing. So just a couple of thoughts about what the project is first before we talk about the marketing strategy that we used.
Yeah, yes.
The project is basically an online movement, community, and university. So every week we have a presentation where we present a specific topic. And with the topic, the most important thing is that you get something that is applicable, something that you can do immediately. So we're not just going to give you a bunch of information and then just go, you're welcome. We want you to do it, because the greatest challenge that we have right now on the internet is not a lack of information. It's not a lack of even good information. It's a lack of application and experiences. Facts do not change opinions. Experiences change opinions.
At the same time, experience feedback.
Yes, yeah. Get feedback. So every time we present a topic, there will be an assignment, a homework, or a challenge. And our goal is to make you do that ASAP.
Yeah.
Because we want you to try it out, and then we want to hear what you have learned.
Right.
Your information, the information that you give to yourself, is the most important.
Mm-hmm.
second, the second most important thing is the information that you decide to give back to your community. So we want you to try it out and then share your experiences. And the topics that we're talking about, it ranges. It's we want to do everything. And a lot of people say you can't do everything because then people don't progress. Listen, we're not in charge of your progression. We're in charge of allowing you to have an experience so that you can figure out whether or not you want to progress. And if you want to, then we'll help you.
Yeah.
We want you to be able to actually create a preference instead of having to trust Coach X that says my system is superior. So, but to give you an idea of the different topics, right now we're focusing on task-oriented movement. So we're giving you guys a lot of tasks. But we'll also be focusing on juggling, we'll be focusing on dancing, loads of different types of dance. We'll be focusing on meditation, breathing. We'll be focusing on learning how to do strongman type of stuff. And just many, many interesting topics. And we are inviting specialists in these topics because we want to get insight into the culture of the different topics, because the culture is, like we talked about, a huge contributor to progression or a lack of progression. And that is basically the main thing of the project. And that's why we call it a project. We can't really define it more than that. Mm-hmm. It is continuously adapting based on what the members experience and what they decide to share.
Yeah.
And if they decide to share some challenges or some wishes regarding certain types of topics, then we will do that. So we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that we get to evolve as a community so that we... also, like we mentioned, learn how to deal with uncertainties as opposed to us giving you a product that guarantees certainty. Everyone is doing that already, so that's not why we are not doing that. And the reason why the marketing has been the way that it's been is simply because everyone is promising something and everyone is pushing their products on everyone else. We don't want you to be interested in the project because we're giving you some lofty promise of a specific result. We want you to become invested in the project because you see that other people are getting to try out stuff and that they're having fun and that they're increasing their need to be curious and their need to understand more about their bodies and their need to interact with more people. Not because they're getting a specific result. So that's why we kind of did a low-key kind of marketing. It was because we wanted not the product to be at the center of what we did. We wanted the people to be at the center of what we did. We wanted to focus on the who and the why and not the what. Because if we were to come out with a specific what, then we would be a part of the problem and not a part of the solution. So I apologize both in advance and post-launch that we decided to market it in this way. But we had to do it like that because the project is the community and the community is the project. And if you want to learn more, here's how you do it. Write me a message. Don't go to a website.
Yeah.
Don't go to like a super cool trailer because there is none. Mm-hmm. Just get in touch with me or with DJ at Strong Camps or with Jonathan, which is at Jonathan Mirth, and just ask us.
Yeah.
We would love to talk with you so that we can answer your questions and not just give you one answer.
And in the spirit of old school, you are actually, you know, like some people ask me, what is the project? So it is actually initiating conversation, real conversation, So yeah. Because they're asking me, what is project? So I'm explaining them. So it is like word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It used to happen in old times.
Yeah.
We used to talk to each other.
Yes.
So if it is so easily available online, mm-hmm. then you'll directly go and click the button.
Mm.
Nothing else to do. Like you don't want to talk to other people.
Yeah.
If that is so easily available.
Yeah. It's, you know, the easiest thing to do would just make people, just give people an answer. Nobody asks you, hey, what is this Apple thing that I've heard about?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so clear to you what Apple
yes.
is, right? And because of that, people are willing to invest more money into that than what they need to. We want you to invest your trust by having us earn it. And the way we earn it is to show you that this is not about, it's not called the product. It's called the project.
Yes.
And it is a community. And it is ever-evolving. And if you join, the project will change because you are a part of it now.
It's consistently adaptable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now I want to ask some question which I really wanted to ask.
Okay.
What is your definition of success?
My definition of success is being able to do good work under as many conditions as possible. It's being able to get good rest under as many conditions as possible. And it's being able to do what I like. That's my personal idea of it. If I'm able to do good work, that means that I can learn more. I can investigate more cultures. I can perhaps contribute to the culture. But I can't do good work without getting good rest, which basically means that I have to be able to feel like I can recover from the amount of work that I do. And to be able to do what I like, be super honest about who I am, what I like, and how that can change so that I'm not stubborn and just associate myself with one thing, that I'm not only, you know, mobility John or squat John. I don't really care about that. I just do what I like at any given time, and it will change. If you look at probably any of my social media profiles, you'll see that there's a change in what I show. And the reason for that is not because my marketing scheme changes. It's just that I go, oh, now I like this thing. So I'm going to be proud of that, and I'm going to acknowledge that and take ownership for what I like. Because That's what matters the most, is once you're able to acknowledge what you like, that's when you start to appreciate the life that you've been given and the resources and everything that you have available to yourself. If you need to justify, then you're probably not going to be able to build the appreciation that is... And for me, appreciate being able to be grateful is the most important quality of all, because it teaches you how to deal with certain situations. You can be grateful despite of something. A lot of the other things that we, or the words or concepts that we use to be happy about our lives, is because of something. And if you're only happy because of something, then your life is going to punch back. Or you're going to punch yourself in the face sooner or later.
I never listen to anyone explaining success this way, like resting, recovery, and finding happiness without any reason.
Mm.
Like we are taught in the schools and colleges that success means becoming someone or something.
Mm. No, I want to be successful because of how I treat myself.
Yeah.
Not because of who I am. Who I am... I mean, who am I? Am I the person that you view me as, or am I
yes.
the person that I view myself as? I want to do it because of how I treat myself. And if I can show you that I'm able to treat myself well, then I think I probably have contributed in a good way.
Yeah.
I think.
And the other one is, who motivates you the way you motivate many of us? Like in this, especially in the movement aspect, like we look at up to you when you do things, and we think, okay, let's try to do this.
Mm.
So who are those people you look up to and you try to do those things?
I'm motivated in two different ways. I'm motivated by those who are creative. I love when people are creative, and it's not just because of novelty. It's not just because of showing off something new or trying to convince people that this is the best new thing. It's because when you're creative, it basically means that you're taking your thoughts, your experiences, and you're sharing it with the world, and you're contributing to the world by having a product that is a result of the life you've lived. And I personally love that. So anyone who's creative, for the sake of not trying to impress someone, but just wanting to go, hey, look what I made.
Yeah.
That to me is, it's wonderful. I'm also extremely motivated by curious people. So like right now in the last week or so, despite a slight sleep deprivation, I've been walking on cloud nine because we've worked with these people in our community in the project. And I love the fact that people show not like the most beautiful or successful or commonly appreciated attempt, but they're just showing, they're sharing just an attempt. And I love looking at their faces when there's suddenly like a, there's not a, they're not going, hooray, I did it, or boo, I couldn't do it. They go, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And seeing someone be curious in this day and age, yeah, where there's so little to be curious about, superficially,
yes,
it really inspires me. And as soon as I see a curious individual, I immediately fall a little bit in love with them.
So not just one or two people, there are so many of them.
Oh, yeah.
Out there who are inspiring you, motivating you to do what you are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we are reaching to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Though I have so many questions, and I can talk like hours with you, but I have to respect your time so much. But where we can find you on social media for more information regarding project, and if someone wants to train under you.
Sure. I primarily only use two mediums on internet. Number one is my website, where you can find all the information about, you know, emails, and I have application forms for coaching and that kind of stuff. And the website is unjohn.com. So that's unjohn.com. And not surprisingly, I'm on Instagram as well.
Yeah.
So my Instagram username is @unjohn. So you can find me there. And again, there's not a whole lot of information about me out there, and I try to keep it that way because I want you to get in touch. And I can't guarantee that I'll be able to answer ASAP, but I will answer. And yeah, I want people to get in touch.
Spark a conversation.
Yes.
That's the most important way to communicate.
Oh, yeah.
Not
yeah.
just writing an email.
No. Talk to me.
Coach, I really want to talk about a lot of things, but there are time constraints for me. We'll try to cover more things
mm-hmm.
during our next meeting.
That sounds good.
Maybe as soon as possible.
Yeah.
It was so invigorating, so inspiring to talk to you about so many things. I wanted to talk to you for years. Maybe last 3 years. I found you on Instagram. And I'm fortunate enough to have you on my podcast. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you, too. There was a lot of... You know the saying, like, you don't really learn something new when you're asked to talk about something? Like, listening is more important?
Mm-hmm.
I agree that listening is super important. But, man, good questions can teach you a lot.
Yeah.
Because it does make you reflect. And
yes.
So, to me... a lot of the things I've said today, it's not something that I've written down in a holy tome or some holy texts I have at home.
Yeah.
It's more about the communication and having the opportunity to be asked a question that you haven't thought about before. So I'm super grateful for that.
Thanks again, Coach.
Thank you. Yeah, we will.
Yeah.
All right.
So, here we are at the end of another enlightening episode with Coach John. This is it for now, but you guys stay tuned as we will be back again with another guest. Like, comment and share us on Facebook. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher and Spotify. Yes, you heard it right. We are now streaming on Spotify. Visit our website and do comment or leave us a message. This is me, Sagar, signing off. Stay strong, keep moving, and stay tuned to Road to Revamp.